is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm joined by Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He is in London. He writes the political economics column, and most recently he writes a column about China and the puzzle about China and capitalism. We begin with a news item right out of Joe's column, anticipated. Hong Kong, Shanghai, Reuters. Cash-strapped property group China Evergrande Group said on Tuesday, that is within these hours in Asia, it has engaged advisors to examine its financial options, and it warned of default risks amid plunging property sales, sending its stock and bond prices sharply lower. That's not the only thing that's sharply lower. It occurs to me, Joe, that everyone with money in Chinese property has now lowered their eyes to the floor, saying, how bad is it? How bad can it get? I come to you, Joe, because most recently in your column, you mentioned that property bubble. What is the risk, not only to the Chinese investor, to the Chinese market, but to the global markets? We know what happened in 08. Good evening, Joe.
Hey, John. Good question, and I don't know, and I'm not sure that anyone knows exactly what the risk of a Chinese property bubble would be, either for the Chinese economy, although that is likely to be very serious if this bubble ever properly pops, or for the global economy. I mean, what we've got going on now is the latest step in a saga that has started unfolding over the past year, where Beijing seems to want to get a handle on the astronomical quantities of debt that have accumulated in the Chinese economy over the past 40 years. Because remember, debt, very cheap subsidized credit extended to state-owned enterprises or politically favored borrowers has been the key ingredient of China's economic growth in recent decades. And, you know, they increasingly are quite worried that this model might not be sustainable. Question has been what to do about it. Now, you know, in recent months, Beijing's solution was that they would actually start allowing some companies to default, which had never quite happened in the same way. But Evergrande is going to be a big, big test of Beijing's willingness to see that through, because the level of indebtedness here is astonishing. It's something like $300 billion of debt that this company is sitting on. It is in the property sector, which is something where they do not want people to get nervous, because so many households have poured all of their household savings into China's property market in the expectation that values would go up. So there are obviously going to be political consequences if that turns out not to be the case. This is, I think, a good moment not to be a policymaker in Beijing having to figure out what you're going to do about all of this.
Because the Evergrande story is not isolated, because the Evergrande story attaches to other property developers, I note most recently the news that Blackstone, an American investment company, private equity, I believe, pulled back from an offer to take over another Chinese property firm for, I think the number was $3 billion. But in any event, this follows hesitation across a broad canvas, mentioning George Soros's column in the Wall Street Journal some days past about how the Chinese market is, I'll be diplomatic, not trustworthy. It's certainly never been transparent, but it's not trustworthy. Your column, though, speaks to the general understanding of what does the Communist Party think is capitalism. Do we know, Joe, have they ever defined capitalism in a way that we can recognize?
Well, yeah, that is something funnily enough, that we're finally starting to talk about after all these many years when people seemed to kind of take it for granted that outsiders understood what was going on there. So I think that the conventional understanding for a long time was that reformers in Beijing kind of got this whole Western-style capitalism thing, and they had a lot of political constraints they were dealing with to do with the fact that, the you know, it's a single-party rule under the Communist Party of China, and you know, you had to deal with the political authoritarianism, but they understood on the economic side that you had to allow more of an open market to develop, and they were moving in that direction. I think we're discovering now is that their vision all along has been very different. And I think that it has been increasingly clear for quite a while that they are trying to get the capital element of capitalism, that they wanted to find ways to get money into the economy, to get investment flowing, to grow businesses. They didn't want the capitalism, you know, the sense that we have in Western capitalist economies, that it isn't just about the flow of money on balance sheets or that sort of thing, but it's also about this whole other suite of issues like rule of law, corporate transparency, accountability to companies' owners, lack of political control over the economy in favor of private owners, exercising their will as shareholders in companies or entrepreneurs. That is not the kind of system that Beijing has created, and it is not the kind of system that the current president Xi Jinping wants to develop. And we're starting to see that. You know, I think there's growing evidence in the way that the party, the state is are meddling in the business affairs. That they are stepping away from this reform path that they are on, and I think it's because they reached their limit of their willingness to allow some of these Western-style reforms and now want to reimpose the political control.
The puzzle, though, Joe, the puzzle is that capitalism doesn't preach that you destroy assets in order to achieve control. Capitalism preaches that you increase prosperity, the bottom line, you make profits. And that gives you control. You can grow. You can acquire. You can hire. You can certainly compete favorably with your rivals, your challenges. It would appear from this distance, I'm very far from China, but you spent many years there. It would appear from this distance that China, the Chinese Communist Party does not believe in capitalism or prosperity or bottom line thinking. They believe in control from the top, command from the top. And in this instance, it appears not just in property, but it appears in technology, in fintech, Alibaba, Alipay, Ant Group, that Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Communist Party, is turning inward and destroying assets in order to what? Keep charge of the failure? Is that what it appears? I don't want to be cynical here, Joe. I'm trying to understand what his ambition is. Where do you think this is going?
I think they have a bunch of overlapping political priorities that are shaping a lot of these economic developments now. One is that Xi Jinping continues to try to maintain his hold on power. And he's in a pretty strong political position within China and within the party right now. He wants to make sure he stays that way. And so I think that a certain amount of the crackdowns that we're seeing in private industry, particularly with some of these very high profile entrepreneurs like Jack Ma, who founded Alibaba and is involved with, Alipay and Ant and all of these other companies. I think that the goal is to prevent an entrepreneur like that from becoming any kind of center of competing political attention, prevent people like that from being in a position where they have access to people through the news channels or through social media and could potentially rally people against the government, even though there's no evidence that any of these entrepreneurs would ever want to do that right now. So I think that that is one political goal. And then I think that another political goal is this recognition that the economy has ended up in a very precarious place right now because there is so much debt in there. They're facing this demographic transition as the country gets older before it has really gotten rich. They faced a lot of these tensions in terms of urban versus rural. All of those can spill over in ways that the party worries might lead people to question the party's right to continue ruling them, or it might lead to challenges to the party's authority. And so there's, I think, the sense in Beijing that they have to very, very carefully manage all of these transitions, tell people exactly what to do with the goal of minimizing the pain involved. And that just isn't the way a modern economy works. I mean, if you have a company like Evergrande, which is sitting on $300 $1 trillion of debt that needs to be worked out somehow. You would prefer that a market mechanism would do that, via established rule of law and hierarchy of creditors and the ability to vet things through the courts. But I think that Beijing seems to think that, that strategy is too risky, that people might not like the outcome. And so the party has to try to always manage that sort of thing.
Joseph Sternberg is the editorial of the Wall Street Journal based in London. This is an op-ed he writes called Political Economics. He's looking at China right now, but he's in Europe, and we need to look at Europe because all these decisions about China's capitalism are being made inside a pandemic, global pandemic, although the pandemic is in China. We're told another city of 4.5 million has been locked down. We don't know what's going on inside China. So let's go to London and our understanding of the pandemic. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He is based in London. He writes Political Economics. And next stop, London. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.